Peter Tilden.
At 10!
Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues. Hour number two brought to you by Sit and Sleep. Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep before can beat anyone's advertised price or your mattress is free. Coming up, the news quiz for a four-pack of tickets to the Port of Los Angeles Lobster Fest. But right now, I'm really excited to have on a very busy person, Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of the Kaiser Health News, author of an amazing book. We talked to her once before, An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business, and How You Can Take It Back. And the great thing, this book is so amazing, and it gives you actionable stuff you can do, and it really helps you explain the predicament we're in and why the GOP is having such a problem getting any kind of health care plan out. And good morning, Dr. Rosenthal. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, I was dying to have you back. Does it feel to you, you've been doing this a long time, and I should tell people, you're a medical doctor, you went to Harvard Medical School, you're also a journalist, and you decided to do this, I think, to help people in a big way. So when you're looking at this, does it feel right now like we're at a tipping point? Because it does to me.
Well, I'm sitting here between Congress and the White House, so we're at a very weird tipping point. But I think in terms of people's experience of healthcare, yes, for sure we're at a tipping point. I mean, the costs are becoming unsupportable. We're talking with the new GOP bill, 22 million people who, many of whom got insurance during the Obama administration, now threatened with losing it. So I think we're at a point where what we're doing is unsustainable, and the kind of at the edges fixes that people keep talking about are not going to do it for most patients, who, by the way, are most voters in the end.
Well, you're exactly right. And I was going to start with that and say, it appears to me, it's almost like we should be working over on this, but we're doing this. We're looking at it as a business thing. We're going to take money here. We're going to move it there. We're going to try and fund this and fund that. When the big problem is the lobbyists and look at Big Pharma, look at the hospitals, look at the insurance companies. They all wrote this healthcare bill. So they're sitting there, and they're having prices go up. And you point out the famous one is the EpiPen, which I now have to use, which is epinephrine, which is a dollar. It's been around 100 years. They gave it a new delivery system, and they can charge you whatever they want. And the same thing with diabetes and everything else. The system, you point out, and I think your example was, if polio was happening today instead of a cure, because they can make more money with stuff to help battle polio rather than the cure, you'd have iron lungs in different colors with apps rather than a conclusion and somebody actually trying to fix it. That's a broken system.
Yeah, it's a terribly broken system. And I think what we're doing now is trying to figure out, who should pay rather than saying, looking at the more fundamental question of, why do we pay so much? Why do we pay 2 to 3 times more than everyone else in the world? Because if we paid kind of even closer to what everyone else in the world is paying, we wouldn't have so many problems with, rising premiums, rising deductibles, needing to narrow what insurance does because we can't afford a really generous insurance policy. The reason we can't afford generous insurance policies are because we pay so much for every little last thing.
Bingo.
And way more than everyone else in the world. So this is not kind of a law of physics that these drugs have to cost this much or that a hospital day has to cost $5,000. No, they do that elsewhere for much less with, I would say, and statistics show, the same or better results.
And when I ask this question, people are going to go, why isn't that? So I should be able to walk into a hospital lobby and look up on the wall and see colonoscopy costs this, angiogram costs this, echocardiogram costs this. Why can't we do that? It sounds stupid that we can't. Peter, why are you even asking that? Because that's not our system. Well, but it should be our system, shouldn't it?
Well, price transparency is certainly an aspect that a first step for whatever system we choose in the long run, because until you know what things cost, no one can be a good consumer, whether it's us as individuals or the government. And what we have now is, this fuzzy system of who knows, and, it could cost anything. The same exact test could cost $5,400 at one hospital and $1,700 in another hospital. And P.S., I'm talking about an echocardiogram, which I know I checked in Japan, costs less than $100 there. So even at the cheaper places here, we're being kind of ripped off. But I think, you know, until those prices are more transparent and we demand of hospitals, testing labs, pharmaceutical companies to give us reasonable prices and justify those prices and make them more transparent, we can't really take that first step of saying, are we paying a reasonable amount? And I think, you know, why is that? Why have they been so resistant? Because if they do these price hikes in darkness and people don't notice them or can't notice them, then who can object? And that's partly how we've gotten into this crazy inflationary place. Because, you know, if a hospital had to say $10,000 for your colonoscopy, you would go, that's a ripoff. I'm not going there. I'd go down the street.
Exactly.
Right?
But as long as it's, well, they're successful in doing it. The lobbying has made them successful in doing that. Medicare can't negotiate drug prices. Because the drug companies won't allow it. So they lobby, they spend a fortune. The amazing thing is Merck can be fined for doing something heinous with a drug, but they're so big and they actually help fund the FDA. There's this give and take that, what are you going to do, shut Merck down and shut off all their other drugs that they're doing? No. So they get a slap on the wrist as part of the way to do business, and they keep going. There's no incentive for them to make prices reasonable. And then you get into something, I don't want to run out of time on this, which blew me away. If I had known this and met you when I was much younger, I would have gone to the Academy of Professional Coders. Holy, I didn't even know this existed. Explain to people, when you get your bill, there's so much on there. It's 50 items. Explain what that's about and how that helps keep us in the dark and how that's really about making as much money as possible.
Well, I mean, if you want to give someone a bill that they can't contest, you give it to them in a foreign language, right? And in code. So, you know, you get a bill that in the U.S. maybe is 50 to 100 pages. I like to joke, I've seen bills for hip replacements in the U.S. and bills for hip replacements in Belgium. I can understand the Belgian ones, which are 3 pages long, even though they're in Flemish. But the American ones are 100 pages long and in code, and it's very hard for the average patient to say, oh, I object to 103.5, because you don't even know what that is. So what I want all patients to do is ask for itemized bills, ask for them in English. We should all be pushing our local hospital systems and our insurance regulators and our representatives in Congress to have a, like, medical clarity and billing act, the same way they did for mortgages. I want to know what I'm paying for, and I want to be able to contest it, because there's one guy in the book whose son had who was billed for a circumcision. He knew his son didn't have a circumcision, but, you know, if it's 102.3, he can't object to that. So I think we should all be consumers the way we are in every other part of our lives. We should scrutinize these things and demand to have bills that we can scrutinize.
The amazing thing, too, about the coding, and I didn't realize how many people are employed as coders. If you're a coder for the hospital, your job is to drive up costs as much as you can. If you're a coder for a doctor or a medical practice, you know that if I come there for something, but I'm given a pain medication in addition, one more thing is added to that bill, you go into a different code, which can double that bill, so the doctor is incentivized by his code guy, who's an expert, to say, don't forget, when you get patients that come in with a migraine, if you give them a painkiller for that migraine, it's a different visit, and you can charge double what you're to charge just seeing them for the migraine.
Right. So it's, you know, be sure to listen to the lungs, even if there's no medical reason to do that, because then you can bill more. And I think that's the problem. The coding industry has become kind of a gaming industry where there are strategists on all sides. The insurers have their coders. The hospitals have theirs. The physicians have to learn to code. And your goal is to try and squeeze as much money out of the system if you're a provider and if you're an insurer, to prevent that money from going out. And so there are these endless debates. It's about, you know, does code 102.63, does that include stitching up the wound or not? When really, like, that doesn't add to my care as a patient. It doesn't help me. It's not about patient care. It's about revenue cycle management. And that's the problem, that so much of our medical system is governed by the business of medicine rather than the than health care, than what's good for our health. And, you know, we can act surprised about that, but we in the U.S. have entrusted our health care system to a number of sectors that are for-profit, whose primary, you know, their primary customers are not us as patients, but their shareholders. And we kind of, without regulation or pressure or something, we can't really expect them to act like saints. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do to satisfy their shareholders first.
Yeah, which
and,
is,
you know,
which is why asthma inhalers, I don't know if people know this, asthma inhalers used to be under $15. What are they now? A 50, 100, and why? Because they made a new package for it? Is that it?
Yeah, it's kind of the rule of American medicine is they charge that much because they can, because someone will pay it. So, yes, they've repatented them, and each time they've repatented them, by often just by putting them in a different package or putting in a new propellant, they get a new patent. Sometimes they're marginally better, but marginally better means often in the U.S. you can triple the price. And the main thing is in other countries they would say, yeah, it's better, so we'll pay somewhat more. But not that much more. In this country, we have no mechanism for pushing back on those prices. None. So, you know, we are paying 2, 3, sometimes 10, 100 times what people are paying in other countries for some of these medicines. And, you know, the answer is always, well, sure, we could have Medicare negotiate drug prices. We could allow for imports. Those things would both bring down drug prices. And everyone kind of goes, oh, well, you know, there are problems with that approach. Yeah, there are problems, but I would say they're not as much of a problem as people paying 100 times what people do in France for simple medicine. So I think it's time for us all to look at our representatives in Congress. And then the next time there, everyone is oohing and aahing about a, you know, an EpiPen moment or a Martin Shkreli moment, to say to them, so what are you actually doing about it after you hold these hearings? We want solutions. And if you're not going to vote for those solutions, I'm going to make this a voting issue next time. I'm going to become a healthcare voter, and you're out, because these drug prices are really killing Americans now.
What's depressing, Elizabeth, as we're watching the Democrats with Obamacare, and now the GOP trying to do this dance of we're going to get you something that's great. They know they're not going to get something great for all the reasons we just mentioned. Hospital consolidation, where you point out hospitals used to consolidate so they could have efficiencies, they could communicate, they can share information, but then it grew to hospitals consolidating so they can raise prices, and then there's sticky pricing, which you point out, which means, hey, look, at the hospital group over there is getting away with that. That's the new price. Let's mark it up here, and then they contribute to Congress. They get these guys elected, and they say, leave us alone. We don't want to shine a light on that. Go play your game. Go tell the public about this and that and the other thing. And what people don't realize is, when you realize that people will not be insured, more people will not be insured, what's going to happen, low-income people who don't have insurance are going to go to the ER, which is going to drive up the prices, and other people are just not going to buy insurance, and they'll get it when they get sick, which is going to drive up the prices. So the system, the whole system, they say Obamacare was spiraling, but the system is spiraling.
Right, and I think that's been a major problem with the narrative, that people blame everything they don't like on Obamacare. I've had commercial insurance, great commercial insurance, for years, and I can tell you I'm experiencing rising copays, rising deductibles. We all are. This is a function of the system, not of the ACA for the most part. And I think, you know, where the ACA ran into trouble is that for some people it wasn't affordable, and that was its name, right, the Affordable Care Act. And that's because, in the end, despite its early attempts to really control prices head on, in order to get buy-in from different parts of the industry, most of those clauses went by the wayside, and it really didn't have a way head on to control these crazy prices. And that's why I think we all have to become smarter health voters, that we have to say, you know, you can talk about these prices, you can bemoan premiums going up, let Medicare negotiate. Think about that. How are you voting on that bill? Let PCORI, the Patient Care Outcomes Research Institute, consider price. Let the FTC break up some of the mergers. Let the FDA have some way to evaluate if a new drug is really, really novel, in which case you can get a really long patent. But maybe drugs that are just me-too drugs or repackaging, they shouldn't get a new patent, or they should get a patent that doesn't come with market exclusivity for a long period. You know, there are, what I wanted to do in the book is point out there are lots of solutions. but we need our politicians, not just the national ones, the state and local regulators too, to be much more active on our behalf.
And you point out, I read an article by you a little while ago, I guess it was, maybe 2 months ago, said we all have pre-existing conditions. It's amazing. Yeah. You take Lexapro for 2 days, you have a pre-existing condition. You have a colonoscopy just to check and do preventive stuff, you have a pre-existing condition. And I pointed out yesterday, cancer is not partisan. This is not Democrat or Republican. This is, we're BSing ourselves. If we continue this way and think Republicans can solve this doing what they're doing, or Democrats can solve this doing what they're doing, we are insane. It's insanity. It can't be solved. Before you go, because we only have a minute or two, there are actionable stuff that you point out, like when you go into a doctor's office, you say, is there a concierge fee? Are you a concierge fee? Are you affiliated with a hospital? Which hospital are you affiliated with and why? Is there extra costs? Are there extra fees? If I need a lab test, you're going to send me to an in-work network provider or not? I mean, ask the questions, and they're all in the book, and it's brilliant. So there is actionable stuff, right?
Yeah, I didn't want people to leave feeling helpless. There is stuff you can do. You won't change the system overnight with it. But when you go to your doctor, there are very practical things that I do that you can do to limit your outlays, to say, don't send my test to the hospital lab because it will cost $700 there. Send it to a commercial lab. Your doctor's computer is probably programmed to send it to the hospital expensive lab. You can push back against that. So, you know, when you get those bills, you can ask for them to be itemized. It's your right to do that, but we don't feel in our hearts that we have a right to question medicine. We should start doing it. And so in the short term, it will save you money. I even have kind of templates of complaint letters you can use to object to bills for the hospital. In the short term, it will save you money. And in the longer term, it will tell everyone in the healthcare system that this matters to us and we're not going to take this all sitting down anymore.
It's an invaluable book. My favorite is when you're in the hospital, the doctor comes in, you go, who are you? Who called you? And how am I getting billed for this? Because you don't know if he's a drive-by doctor or a hospital's primary doctor. You don't know what he is. And by the way, depending on who he is and what he is, it's coded again. It could cost you five times more than you think you're going to get paying this guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many people have been kind of drive by a physical therapy visit in the hospital? You know, someone says, oh, can I help you walk to the bathroom? And then suddenly it's a $250 charge for physical therapy. You know, and that there are a lot of really good people in the system who object to this billing, who don't even know that, you know, when they do something for you in a hospital, that's kind of, there's someone else in the back room at the cash register saying, oh, that's $500. So, you know, I don't always think you should blame the frontline people you see. It's mostly the back end people who are figuring out how to bill all those things that to me are much more of the trouble.
I thank you for the book. It's one of the best books I've ever read having to do with our health care today. You really did an amazing job, and there's so many actionable things in there. Read it, because you don't want to be in the dark, because they're going to come at us, Republicans, Democrats, and make claims. Unless this system is fixed in an area that needs to be fixed, the premiums, unfortunately, are going to go up. They're not going to go down. Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News, author of An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business, and How You Can Take It Back. The website, anamericansickness.com, and her Twitter is at Rosenthal Health. I know how busy you are. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You take care. I think now would be the time to call. Yeah, let's do it now. 800-222-5222. Four-pack of tickets to the world-famous Port of Los Angeles Lobster Fest. Every type of lobster. Lobster quesadillas. Lobster mac and cheese. And you know what? Lobster. To Food and Music Weekend, the 14th, 15th, and 16th from the Waterfront. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tillman 10 continues. You know what? I know Dr. Drew is going to be mad because he's used to me doing the quiz later on. But I'm just feeling it now. The lines are lit. Let's just do it. And let's see. The lines are lit. Let's go to Ben on the 10 freeway. You're on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing well. What do you do, Ben?
I'm in sales.
And what do you sell?
Medical marijuana products.
Medical marijuana products. Boy, there was a hesitancy there, like you were not sure if you should reveal it, like a cop car is going to pull up as soon as you announce it on the air.
You're not supposed to announce it until January.
All right. Well, nobody knows who you are, but nobody knows which Ben this is, and this may not even be your real name, so nobody's judging. But you know how we do. You know how we do this quiz. We do multiple choice, yep. True and false. You listen closely to me, and you get most of them right. And we're sending you to the Port of Los Angeles Lobster Fest. So here we go, Stephen. My game show music. Time Magazine has asked that the Trump Organization remove what from some of their clubs? A, anyone who makes less than $1 million a year. B, phony magazine covers featuring Trump. Or C, a collection of gold-encrusted bidets. Is it $1 million a year, phony magazine covers, or a collection of gold-encrusted bidets? It is. It's a phony magazine cover. They're asking that the frame cover image of Trump be taken down from the walls of several golf clubs. Donald Trump said that a female Irish reporter has, A, no brains at all, B, a nice smile, or C, incredible gazingas. Is it brains, nice smile, or gazingas?
It could be all of the above, but I'm going to go with B.
I like you. Yeah, he actually said a Washington correspondent, Catriona Perry, introduced herself during a congratulatory call to newly elected Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar. She's a nice smile on her face, so I bet she treats you well. A man who drove into a Ten Commandments monument in Oklahoma was arrested this morning for A, public indecency, B, driving without a license, or C, driving into a Ten Commandments monument in Arkansas.
C.
Yes, exactly right. The monument was smashed to pieces when someone rammed a vehicle into it early Wednesday. Basketball legend Phil Jackson announced today that he's what? A, planning on becoming a very tall woman. B, leaving the New York Knicks organization. Or C, returning to the Los Angeles Lakers.
Some would hope it would be C, but it's B.
There you go. Leaving the... Really? You think if he came back, he could do it again? I think it depends on the team.
That's true.
He's not magic. Okay, what actor's San Luis Obispo ranch burned down on Monday night? Is it Will Smith? Is it Johnny Galecki from The Big Bang Theory or George Clooney?
B.
It is B. It's Johnny Galecki. His ranch, they're calling it a large ranch. I guess when you make $1.3 million a week, you can have a very large ranch. But what a shame. He was not at the property at the time. A creator of what? What thing died today at age 91? A, the helicopter? B, Paddington Bear, or C, mechanical pencils?
B.
It is. Last-minute Christmas gift for his wife that inspired Michael Bond to create Paddington Bear, the marmalade-loving teddy, in a duffel coat and floppy hat. Former Alaska governor, Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin is suing whom for defamation? Is it Matsu Valley Frontiersman? Is it CNN? Or is it the New York Times? It is. Palin is suing the New York Times for accusing her of incitement in a mass shooting in a defamation case. She says the newspaper published a statement about her that it knew to be false. According to research for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, what state has the most overweight pets? That's dogs and cats. Is it A, Minnesota, B, North Dakota, or C, Iowa?
A.
It is Minnesota. I don't know why. Topping the list for both chunky dogs and fat cats, Minnesota, where 41% of the dogs and 46% of the cats were rated by veterinarians as overweight or obese. Second place, Nebraska, 39% for dogs and 43% for cats. And your last question, let's see here. What is the only metropolitan area in America where consumers making a median income can afford a new car? Is it Washington, D.C.? Is it San Francisco? Or is it Atlanta? It is. Personal Finance website says the average household in Washington, D.C. makes nearly $100,000 a year. The rest of the 25 largest metropolitan areas, most people can't afford to buy the average price new car with a 20% down payment and four-year repayment schedule. Hey, dude, you're going to see the Port of Los Angeles Lobster Fest. You'll be there eating and having a great time. Food, music, July 14th, 15th, and 16th on the San Pedro waterfront. Stay in line. Dino will get you your tickets, all right?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, congratulations. Have a wonderful time. All right, Stephen, cut the happy music. We're going to something much more serious here. Although that makes any story. It's a horrible story. Boy, look at that thing on your head. We're going to have to remove that. That music underneath makes... When I come into a doctor's office, it's we found something very disconcerting in your colon. That music should be playing. All right, enough. So the city council is voting today on this generous deal for the DWP, and you should know about it. It was fast-tracked, and it provides... six raises, I mentioned this the other day, over the next 5 years, lifting the pay at the DWP anywhere from 13.2% to 22.3% by 2021. It depends on inflation. And the rationale has always been, and I mentioned it the other day, and I said, I wish I knew how many people this affected. But the rationale has always been that it's to prevent skilled workers from abandoning the DWP for higher paying jobs, because their theory is, or their statement is, you know what? We pay a lot of money to train these people. And then we train them, and then they bail, handfuls of them bail to get higher paying jobs. So that's the rationale. That we've been hearing that, what, since the Mesozoic era, okay? You got to pay them. Got to pay them a lot of money. And I don't begrudge, man, the linemen who are out there in bad weather when it happens and up on poles helping us out and doing that stuff. You work really hard. But the DWP in general hands us a rash of you-know-what on a daily basis. Anyway, so think of that headline. Don't want skilled workers to abandon the DWP. That's why we give them the money and the raises. Well, fewer than 100 DWP employees have resigned from the department and left city services in each of the last 4 years. How many are there in the DWP? 9,000. So you're now going to pay 9,000 people in all of this great deal, possibly 22.3% by 2021, to keep 100 employees from resigning every year. What? The average wage for DWP employees was $102,997, with the department paying an additional $16,000 plus for retirement and health benefits. The big deal is, and they have about 500 who retired, the big deal is the overtime. And the big get back for giving all of these raises is the mayor says, they shut down those two nonprofits for employee training, so we saved $4 million. Well, first of all, those nonprofits were heinous. And remember when Ron Galpin did an audit of those nonprofits? Here we are paying money to DWP. We're ratepayers, we're taxpayers. And Ron Galpin was allowed. Here you go, what are these doing with our money? You're taking $4 million of our money. Where's it going? And they said, okay, now that you're pressing us, Mr. Legal Team, we will give you limited access. I think Ron Galpin said you're allowed to go in there, but you couldn't record or take a phone in. You could take a pad and write down stuff you saw, and you had limited time. It's like a game show. Let's start the clock now. You can run into that room and see how much you can grab. He was allowed to do a limited audit of the nonprofit's records. And they found out in 5 years, just a handful of the employees charged more than $660,000 to their credit cards for steak dinners, trips to Vegas, Hawaii, New Orleans. And the big deal, the concession we got is, we don't have to pay those anymore. We're shutting them down. No, maybe people should have been arrested for those. It smells like, not like Teen Spirit, it smells like a big problem. So congratulations to all of us. I just wanted to say, get out the party hats, the balloons, and let's celebrate. The nonprofits which did that are being shut down. Wow, congratulations. And we're overpaying people. Because 100 leave every year to take other jobs. It's a really great concession. Really, really smart. Oh, my gosh. And, of course, Brian Darcy, the head of the International Brotherhood of Electric Workers, did not respond to a request for comment. Why should he? He's sitting in a palace somewhere driving some $8 billion car, driving around saying, I get what I want every time. So base salaries, yeah, didn't grow that much from 2013 to 2015. But you know what? Overtime pay grew almost 30% over the same period. More than 100 DWP employees made more than $100,000 in overtime. At least three dozen of those were linemen and supervisors. The average pay for linemen, including overtime, was $146,854. Supervisors averaged $204,000. So it's amazing. I mean, when you look at negotiating, you could send a child in there who barely speaks English to do the negotiation and get them to shut down two training and safety nonprofits that were potentially a huge problem. I don't want to say illegal, but smelled like something was wrong. So congratulations. Amazing bargaining. Got those shut down. And in essence, you're giving everybody else huge money because you don't want another 100 of the 9,000 to leave. So isn't that amazing? I was waiting for that number. I wanted to know the rationale because I've been heard that since I've gotten to L.A. Man, they will leave. They'll go other places. Really, secretaries filing out of the DWP because they're being called at night going, Rita, you're not going to believe this. I can pay you 30% more to do your secretarial job over at another utility. Pack up your stuff and sneak out. Really? Janitors. Hal, put down the broom. I can get you double what you're getting paid to sweep over there. Come over. Really? We're worried about that. So we finally found out the number. 100. Less than 100. Each year have resigned and left us. And by the way, we don't even know. I don't know. The 100. How many? Hal had a stroke. He was leaving. Bill wanted to take time with his family. How do you know where they went and that it was actually to leave for a better paying job? So what nonsense. So there you go. I guess maybe you don't care, but you should know. The generous new contract for the DWP. Why did it need to be that generous? If you have a sense of that, give me a call. I think I know the answer. 800-222-5222. I think it's about maybe helping people's political careers and, you know, donating to races for the future. Could be that, because there would be no other reason to do it. I love that I forgot about that Ron Galperin was you're allowed to do a limited. We think there's some wrongdoing over here. There's a problem over here. We want to see. The city was told by the DWP that they were allowed to do a limited audit of the nonprofit's records. When the IRS calls me this year to do an audit, I'm going to say, hey, I discussed it with my wife, and I got to tell you guys, first of all, here's when's good for me, okay? Probably, I don't know, late September-ish, and we're going to give you like two boxes, a limited audit, okay, guys? What do you mean you're putting handcuffs on my wife? Really? You're taking my house and my car? No. You're not allowed to do that because you didn't hear me. Limited audit. Guys, why are you taking my dog away in cuffs? Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues. You know what? We're playing some U2 because I just realized I talked about the DWP. Not allowing, giving Ron Galperin a limited audit. I know that Dino has been trying to audit Bono on the Edge to see where his money went, all his money went, because he went to the bank the other day. It was none in there. And it just had a, and there was like a little wool hat lying on the floor of his bank the other day. He thinks it's from the Edge, who just came in and took the money. So they're going to look at all of the video camera footage now at Wells Fargo to see if the Edge now just got the okay to just take the money out of there and buy tickets ahead of time for all their shows. And Dino has no say in it. He's just told when to show up. So good luck with that, Dino. We talked about John McEnroe. I was laughing about this story because, you know, he gave an interview where he said that Serena Williams is the greatest female tennis player in the world. But when asked why he said female, he responded by saying if she played the men's circuit, she'd be like 700th in the world. And then he doubled down on the CBS Morning Show and said, yeah, female playing a male, she probably wouldn't do so well. And then what's happened? It hasn't gone away yet. He was now on Stephen Colbert. So the question is, did he finally apologize? Or did he, I guess at this point, triple down? Here's what happened.
That if Serena Williams won the men's circuit, she'd be like number 700 in the world. Okay? Now listen.
It didn't go over big with my daughters either. Okay?
You cannot be serious.
You know, thank you. Remember the honeymooners, Ralph sure. Cramden?
Yeah.
Me and my big mouth!
What was the question that led you to that answer?
Well, we were talking to someone on NPR radio, and yeah. She said something to the effect, she was asking about Serena. I said, Serena Williams is the greatest female tennis player that ever lived. And I think she's absolutely tremendous. And she said, she followed up with, well, why do you have to say female tennis player?
Ugh.
Isn't she the greatest tennis player that ever lived? And I just said, well, wait, whoa, hang on a second here. If we're going to talk about that, then you get into a little different category. You know, do they say that about girl basketball players, that they're as good as Michael Jordan? For example.
They might say women's basketball players.
Women's
basketball
players. <Okay.
laughs> Sure. I'm still on air tomorrow. You get to leave. All right?
People always ask me, can you beat Serena Williams? Mm-hmm. What was this? Ooh, what is this? I suppose my girls don't think I can beat her now. I thought I could beat her. She's pregnant, so maybe I should.
Anyway, well, he's making fun of it now. But, I mean, really? The fact that there's separate female and male basketball and golf and football and hockey and volleyball, or is that like we shouldn't acknowledge that? Well, that doesn't exist. So the best male tennis player is going to cream Serena Williams because of the height, the weight advantage, the fact that if you're taller, you can get to the ball quicker. This is why they have women's tennis, and this is why they have men's tennis. But that doesn't diminish how good she is. She's beyond, she's almost inhuman. It's inhuman how good she is and how many championships he's won. So for McEnroe to have to apologize, and this has become controversial, that he says she's the greatest female tennis player in the world, but not the best tennis player in the world, really, we become nuts that even becomes a discussion point, that becomes really controversial. So, I mean, we went through this with Bobby Riggs. We talked about it yesterday, Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King. If we're going to go there, anyway, at least he turned it into comedy. Yeah, McEnroe probably couldn't beat her. It is amazing, though, talking to extreme athletes, because I got to ask Pete Sampras, why do you retire if you're that good? And I think I mentioned this the other day. These guys know when they're that good and they're at the top of their game, when they lose something and we can't even see it, they lose that extra nanosecond getting to the ball, or they lose that explosive ability to hit the ball or to get up to the net in time, they don't want to be embarrassed. And most of them know when to get out and go into the senior tour. I mean, they can make a lot of money if they're highly ranked. But I've talked to enough pros that say they know when they're just a notch down from where they used to be, which is why they retire. But Serena and her sister, what amazing athletes, and they shouldn't be diminished in any way. But John McEnroe shouldn't be in a position where he has to defend the fact that she's not the best tennis player, really. All right, Talk Radio 790. KABC, Dr. Drew is next with Crosstalk. It's Peter Tobin reminding you that this July 4th, declare your independence from sleeping on your lumpy old mattress during Sit and Sleep's independent sale. You can save over 50% off Beautyrest, Sealy, Serta, and Kingsdown, normally $19.99, now just $9.89. And with your good credit, sleep interest-free for 48 months with your minimum monthly payment and 10% down. Plus, get free local delivery. So exercise your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of dreaminess during Sit and Sleep's independent sale. Because, of course, Sit and Sleep will beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free.
Your car's in pretty good shape. If it's only 6 or 7 years old, you just commute to work every day and take the occasional road trip. Sometimes you drive around just so your dog can hang his head out the window. Your car doesn't have to be old to accumulate miles. Pennzoil High Mileage is for any vehicle with 75,000 miles or more on it. It's specially formulated to reduce oil consumption and leaks and reduce engine wear. Pennzoil High Mileage, because before you know it, you'll be on the road again. Make the switch to Pennzoil at a Jiffy Lube near you.
If you can't seem to stay ahead of your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt, medical bills, and department store debt forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. This program has been used by thousands to legally forgive millions in unsecured debt. It's not bankruptcy. It's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven from what you owe your creditors. Call for free information and get all your questions answered in the first free call. The more you owe, the more you can save. If you have at least $10,000 or more in credit card bills, this debt forgiveness program can be very effective. Call for free information and find out more now. 800-375-1175. There is no cost or obligation for the information. Don't wait. Call 800-375-1175. That's 800-375-1175. Get your debt problem solved. Call 800-375-1175 today.
Lately, a lot of people have been asking, with the stock market at record high, should I take my stock market gains, protect what I have and get out, or will the stock market continue to go up?
This is Ken Morave, host of the Money Matters radio show, inviting you to our free seminar.
Choose 7 p.m. tomorrow, Hilton Woodland Hills, 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 11th, Homewood Suites, John Wayne Airport, or 1 p.m. Saturday, July 15th, Ayers Hotel, Manhattan Beach. Reserve now at moneymatters.net. That's moneymatters.net, or call 800-994-0302.
Hey, it's Jillian. I'm loving all the feedback from you from my home consignment center challenge. Now, you know, when I dared you to visit any of the 5 home consignment center showrooms and not buy anything, well, I did not expect the outpouring of responses. Gail from Newport Beach told me that she's won the challenge. Well, and she's lost a few times. The home consignment center's Newport store has become her, quote, sanctuary. I know the feeling. I challenge you to go to any one of the home consignment centers and leave empty-handed. It's impossible. They have furniture, decor, jewelry at all of the beautiful home consignment center showrooms. It's like walking into another realm of decor at unbelievable prices. You'll feel inspired. Check them out at one of their 5 showrooms all over Southern California. You can find them online at thehomeconsignmentcenter.com. And if you get inspired to redo some of your home decor, remember, you can always consign the old pieces that are still gorgeous, but maybe they don't fit into your new look anymore, and you can make some cash while doing it. Find your nearest showroom at thehomeconsignmentcenter.com.
Wake up! With Doug McIntyre in the morning.
A new study came to the conclusion that those who drink black coffee are sadists or psychopathic tendencies.
Whoa.
How did they come to that?
Listen, that's not, how they got this. This is science. Are you a science denier? Next thing you say is...
I consider myself a psychopath.
Well, they never do.
Okay, I don't consider Bill Thomas a psychopath.
Okay. Why do you think we keep him in that special cage?
McIntyre in the morning. Now with Leanne Tweeden News. 5 to 10 on KABC.
Looking for some crosstalk, baby, believe me.
Talk with your 790 KABC. Tweeden Tones the 10 is wrapping up. I'll be back for the 6-ish, of course. Top 6 and 6-ish. Dr. Drew is here, ready to do his show.
I am indeed. And let's see, I'll be talking to a guy that wrote a big article about the opioid crisis, saying that it could, estimate it could kill 500,000 Americans in the next decade, which I think that's
reasonable, sort of, right?
Yeah, goes without saying, I think. And they've already killed 200,000 or something. I mean, it's, come on. We're right up, right on our pace.
Is the industry even incentivized in any way to, or are they going, whoa, it's horrible, we get it.
What industry?
The industry is churning out the opiates. I mean, are they really going to say, yeah, let's cut our business carefully, it's horrible.
No, they're happy to. It's the physicians that are writing the prescriptions.
Well, really think the pharmaceutical companies that are making opiates are willing to say, let's make half as much?
They know they're in big trouble. They're trying to get, doctors aren't doing their job.
Unreal.
It's us. Stop it with the big pharma. It's us. We're the ones with the name on the prescription. We're doing this. And then it's, fentanyl and heroin after that, and once we cut them off.
Right. Why did it grow so big, Drew? And not that we have time here. I didn't want to cut into your time. But what was the turning point, the tipping point for that, for opiates?
For the opiate thing?
Yes.
It was in the late 90s. They started threatening doctors with something called patient abuse, elder abuse. It was reckless negligence if doctors didn't treat pain adequately. And there were gigantic fines and the threats of imprisonment.
So got it.
And it's all outside of malpractice. This is a criminal charge outside of malpractice. So everyone, all right, I don't know. We sent everybody to pain specialists then, and they took the philosophy that pain is what the patient says it is. And who are we to say? And the patient, they know when their pain's controlled. Oh, my patient's is game on.
All right, game on. There you go. The moment
and
time.
And then the happy face became the fifth vital sign. More important than your pulse. How much would rate the pain? More important than pulse. Zero pulse. Who cares about that? But, is your pain controlled? We went through 20 years of this. It was insanity. Insanity. And some guys are trained on that and are having trouble letting go.
And anyway, I can sit across from you right now and say, I'm in tremendous pain. I need your help. And how are you going to say you're not?
Right.
And by the way, I am. I'm just telling you that I'm in pain. Emotional.
You're a BS.
Emotional. I can tell. Thank you very much.
So then I'm going to talk to Misty Maris. We're going to talk about the health care bill and talk about Trump trying to get votes and what's likely to go there. And then I got a rinsing report from Roop. 111 terminally ill patients took their own lives in the first 6 months of the California Right to Die law. I think it's an interesting story. And we're going to get into a little bit about the LAPD cadets. A lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, I want to join. Bad. You know what? I'm signing up for that program.
I know. It's like fun.
Yeah. Well, I don't have to use my car.
Run around
really
a cruiser.
Cool. It's really cool. Yeah. All right. 800-222. Save mileage on the family car. 800-222-5222 is the phone number for you.